My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
I think we got a special treat today for a lot of the kayfabers out there, man.
What do you got? Special treat for me, I'll tell you that.
What do you got first, Jimmy?
Well, we're doing an Image book, so I have Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive. This is my Image collection of all the Street Angel comics that Image published, along with a few that nobody published. You know, it's a skateboarder ninja, so I don't know how much more I can say to sell that. To me, that's the perfect combination for a superhero comic.
We're doing an Image.
And available wherever comics are sold. So a descendant of 1963, if you will.
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor is where I'm serializing my current comics project, Red Room. Murder on the Dark Web for fun and profit, Jimmy. $3 will get you the complete archive. There are 2 issues up there as we speak. I'm working on the 6th issue right this minute, but it will see a print edition later this year. More news on that later, but if you can't wait, support the project. $3 gets that archive.
Great looking image.
Mystery Incorporated, 1963, number one.
This is an amazing book. You know, this is Image Comics. I believe within the first year of Image publishing, this book comes out. And so Image, the hottest thing at the time for me, for comics in general, selling record numbers everywhere. And who should emerge from his doing indie alternative comics? Alan Moore returns to superheroes with 1963. This was a big deal, man. Lots of hype at a time of like maximum hype for comics. This was a pretty exciting project.
Jimmy, I was 11 years old when this came out, right? I had no knowledge of the comics business, industry, past, present, any of that stuff. The wool was pulled over my eyes. I knew a little bit. I knew the stuff that's in the Shop at Save, right? The footballers and the jocks and shit were the comic speculators in school. So, like, I didn't even know about Image Comics at that point. Like, they were showing me the Spawns and shit like that at first. And I'm like, oh, McFarlane's actually doing something? That computer color is dope. Went to the Bill and Waltz at Century 3 Mall, and they had, you know, the bust was in effect, right? They would have, you know, 10 for $2 Image Comic, like, grab bags, and it would be all your B-lister titles and stuff. Every one of these issues was collected in there, and when I grabbed it, I was and pulled out the 1963s, I was like, you know, I have Overstreet guides that have talk about all of these old companies. I had no idea that Image was around way longer than the kids at school thought, because these characters never saw them, and they're referencing, you know, issue 27 of Mystery Incorporated from 1963. Like where was I? I didn't know Rick Veitch. I didn't know, like, I saw Alan Moore's name, and I just automatically assumed, oh, he's been around a while.
Yeah, it's a great team throughout all of these books. We're just looking at this first one here today, but look at those credits, man. Rick Veitch, who we've talked to, and looked at some of his other works, amazing cartoonist. I don't know that I would have read Brat Pack before this, so this could have been my first Rick Veitch. Dave Gibbons, obviously, I was familiar with Watchmen. He's doing the inks here. They're a really nice pair. Their art together looks great. Don Simpson, who we looked at recently with Megaton Man, doing stellar lettering. And now Marvin Kilroy, I don't know him as a colorist. And Murphy Anderson is mentioned in the letters column of this issue. So
I think this is fake shit right here.
I think it could be. Which brings us to what this whole series is, what you're describing, Ed, of like, I didn't know Image was around in 1963. There's a lot of kayfabe going on here, and they do some really smart stuff where they're mixing real things, real people, with things that aren't real, ads that look like they could be real but are doctored. It's a real blurring of like, what are we looking at, even down to production. So, you know, you mentioned computer colors on like Spawn and how Image was so known for that.
Slick paper.
Yeah, high production values. And you get this and it's newsprint.
Yes.
And it's not computer colors. This blew my mind. This was one of the first things that I would look at and be like, it's all deliberate. These are all creative choices as to like the production part, the paper stock, the color, like all of this you have control over. And they were using it for this effect that just kind of changed me a little bit. You know, reading this, it was like you rewired part of my brain to think about making comics differently. Up to this point, what making comics meant, the lines you drew on paper.
Right.
After this, it was like, oh, it's the entire, it's everything. It's the paper you choose. It's the binding. It's all of these elements.
Yeah, that is the stuff that is less obvious. And the stuff that is obvious when you're trying to do this kind of pastiche. These guys are perfect for the job. Rick Veitch is amazing at composing these Kirby-like energetic panels. Alan Moore is fantastic at the hyperbolic verbiage and the stuff that he gets in the dialogue balloons really rings true to like the Stan Lee Marvel kind of pacing and dialogue.
One more guy worth mentioning is Steve Bissett. So if you look, you know, if you look at like the trademarks and stuff, it's more Bissett and Rick Veitch. Bissett's not doing the creative work on this particular book, but part of the creative team of like those three, I think, came up with this whole concept together. And we'll see him on, you know, doing creative duties as we progress through the series or as you look at other issues. But kind of a genius concept.
Absolutely.
Especially in the context of like what 1993 comics and Image comics looked like. This is amazing.
So I don't think it... I don't think anybody will be confused that this is kind of like, you know, the Fantastic Four homage team. And that's consistent with the rest of the 1963 stuff. You'll see sort of, you know, primo era Marvel homage characters.
Yeah, and of course, 1963, kind of the beginning of the Marvel Universe. I think that's all very deliberate and referential. I like some of the tweaks, like the Electric guy instead of the Human Torch. I like that guy. I like how he looks. Like, the way he's colored is really cool. And even the energy, the way he's drawn, I like a lot. I think visually he works well.
You mentioned the Murphy Anderson, and he was sort of, I don't know if he owned the color separation house, or he was very closely tied, and I know his son had some connection there as well. They use some interesting screens for these colors, like that blue on your Electric guy, where it's like a bunch of parallel lines. You would see that in like first comics. So some of the some of the seps would be that way. But I always sort of make note of that whenever I see that. You know, you still get the same 25% cyan or whatever, but you're just not using dots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it looks like even the magenta plate with the like the energy effect around him, the orange part. Even that magenta plate is the horizontal lines, at least in that panel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like how they achieve their 25%. They get so much stuff in here in this, you know, first issue or this singular issue. You get the origin. You get a little bit of stuff from all the characters so that we see their power. We get a good tour of their little facility.
You know, the one thing that I think would be amazing if there were more of these comics, Neon Queen. I feel like you could spot color that neon and really make her look alien on these pages, and that would be kind of neat. But, I mean, it's very pleasurable, and, you know, partially for those references, and also because this is an A-list team of creators that are really bringing some witty stuff to it.
Jimmy, with all we know that's supposed to transpire at the end and the fateful issue that has never and will never be drawn, it's like they gave it to us at the very beginning, bro.
So much to love. So much to love, Ed. Single panels, I love he's reading a comic that's set in this universe. I love Neon Queen's, her powers as she drifts, even the eyeball, like the drawing's even changing. And then, yeah, the storyline that we're looking at here is this character that's like backing through, oh man, what's the device is like the maybe window or something the maybe machine is what this guy's coming out of, and he's walking backwards, and it has to do with this time
paradox stuff.
Fascinating, really cool, like sci-fi stuff. Again, going back to source material being Fantastic Four, those sci-fi elements are something that I think the best Fantastic Four stories have, and that's what we're seeing here with that guy coming through the time machine.
And you notice he had a bow and arrow. Very, very important. We certainly plan on continuing to look at more 1963 comics. And, you know, there's a big reveal with that guy. So after they have their first little altercation with him, whatever you want to call it, now they're on the hunt for him. So this gives us the opportunity to see more of the Mystery Incorporated lair. Maybe he planted a bomb in this incredible looking train that you see in one panel, we'll never see again.
Yeah.
But they did that work.
It's great. This train's gimmick is this is how they can get across country real fast. So then you have to imagine that they've built a subterranean train that only they use.
Right. That's some Elon Musk shit. Maybe he has that.
Could be. Could be where he got the idea. All the fake stuff, too. Like, the page of text that you see there, this is highlighting, like, the future issues that are going to come out from 1963. So, real stuff, but within the context of, like, what we think of as, like, you know, Stan's soapbox and those kind of pages of checklists of what else is coming out. So, again, mixing in fake and real. and highlighting some of the creators. Chester Brown gets that orange box, is about Chester Brown, and he's going to be inking a story or a couple stories, but that box is talking about his real comics and talking about Drawn and Quarterly and Peep Show and Dirty Plot and Yummy Fur. Like, what is this book?
Alan Moore with his, like, it's not just on the comic page. His Stanley hyperbole. Talk about wild. Who should drop into the stifling, steamy 63 sweatshop for a visit the other day but our old friends, awesome Andy Warhol and swinging Salvador Dali.
So great.
Great guys both.
So great. And that blue box, Ed, you mentioned to, you know, this guy's carrying a bow and arrow and we know big plans. That blue box is what is those plans. That's the announcement about the annual, the 1963 annual that's going to, man, talk about the comics that never came to be. Like, it's one of my dream comics, damn near the top of my list, if not number one.
Kayfabers. After Image Grand Design, maybe you draw that one?
Ooh. There's a very quick, you know, like, they're happening down below in this subway-like tunnel area, but above them, we see the Fury cameo, very in line with early Marvel Universe.
Absolutely.
Right? You just see barely a character walk by in the background of a panel. So kind of cool to see what's going on up top.
Perfectly in line with that Marvel stuff, man.
And it's a fun story that, you know, what's going on underneath is that this invader has set off all these alarms. And so now Mystery Incorporated has to go through their own alarm system, defense system, and it's a chance to just show off their powers, which that's the fun stuff, right? Let's see them in action.
Yeah, it feels very much like that Juggernaut issue of X-Men that we checked out earlier.
I love whenever like the Crystal, you know, the leader bonds onto this robot, and it's such a great visual. So much good stuff. All the stuff with really all these characters, I think, look good. Anytime we see them, they stand out.
Doesn't that feel real Fletcher Hanks-like?
It does. It's got to be the blue, I think, is probably like Stardust.
Yeah,
but
it's a
blue
and
yellow.
Don Simpson is an incredible letterer.
Yeah.
He's amazing, man. He really captures that Art Simek silver. He's the only guy who could letter this comic.
I always think about bootlegging shirts when I find them. I would like one that was just 1963 is coming. I guess that's the back of this shirt. But kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure, man. I freaking hate front and back silk screens.
I think this is Don Simpson lettering.
Oh, all this. Yeah, really? Yeah, unmistakable. Unmistakable. And see, it's right here where you're like, man, you really we need that comic.
Yeah.
Kayfabers, get on that.
Who uses a bow and arrow in Image?
Right.
Who could it be? How great are all these effects, though? There are so many of these panels, you know, we're kind of talking story overall, and kind of rightfully so, but so many of these panels are just great, great images, you know, like the mask guy, really strong.
Veitch blows my mind, man, routinely with the stuff that he draws and the shit that comes out of his imagination. You know, I don't think it's any secret that he opened his third eye a couple of times in his life, man, and he can put it down on the page. But then that's juxtaposed...
Big time, too, here, where you see him, like, going through the digital transition.
With the very kind of, like, precise kind of squareness of Dave Gibbons, who seems very, like, way more rigid of a character when it comes to his process. Take a look at the ones and zeros page. Like, I mean, it's a little bit of shatter. Like are they kayfabing the digital effect, or...
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I don't think
for,
so.
For, you know, like a concept of being in 1963, even the word balloons, if you look at them, they're like this bitmapped, I don't know, 8-bit kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you achieve that. Weird. That feels like a Zot reference.
It does, yeah.
I don't think McLeod does anything in this series, but it wouldn't have surprised me if he did. It feels like this would fit right in. And if he was still around Massachusetts, probably got to sit in on some sessions with Bissette and Veitch talking about these concepts.
I can't recall, but I think he might have had a little cameo on that 2-page spread that's going to come later. And now we're getting into comic book science. Where they're explaining what we just witnessed. Because the big mystery was the guy walking backwards,
right,
and not interacting with her. And because of the time paradox stuff, you see 1993 coming back in time, another clue into who this character is. They get into all of time was moving backwards when you saw him do his thing. He was not walking backwards.
And another example of like the great panels that illustrate this concept. That's such a good panel. So many of these panels are just wonderful. Great compositions. It really is like 101 for building your panels.
If you're going to do a Kirby gimmick, man, when he was really firing on all cylinders on Fantastic Four, you got to get in one of those photo collages.
Yes. Yeah, they hit all the beats that you would want to hit. If you made a checklist going into this, they cover all of them. I love how the figures look, too. There's a real weight to those figures as they're like going through this thing.
And it's
neat.
It's
good.
It's the Kirby weight. Like, you know, this would be, was it in This Man, This Monster? Like the collage that would be in that one where it's, you know, Mr. Fantastic. And it's like, he's going in it that way. It's kind of awkward or whatever. This stuff here on top of like the Stan Soapbox stuff earlier, this is where I was like, how did an entire bibliography, entire catalog of Comic Company sneak by me without me ever knowing?
It's so funny because I still find these comic companies that they're not going to run 30 years, but do have these histories that pop up, and I'm like, what? Love this kind of stuff, like creating your letterhead art. And then this is the mention of Murphy Anderson, and that mention really drew attention for me, thinking about how are these colors made? You know, like that was part of me taking this apart and really seeing this as like deliberate.
Oh, right, right.
And conscious, you know, like they're making a book that's pretty different than what was on the stands. Pretty different than all the Image books I was picking up.
That's the way to put it, because it's still in line with
the
damn Marvel
that's
comics
the funny
that are
thing,
still
yeah.
doing the same shit.
They could have farmed this out to Marvel and it would have looked, the colors could have looked the same
yeah.
production.
What's another trope of those 60s Marvel comics, and whenever they couldn't sell an extra ad page or whatever, get Jack to drop a splash real fast, man.
Pretty well done, too. They feel like they fit that kind of style, but they look really good.
Yeah, for sure.
Kid Dynamo is just a great... It works so well. That blue against all the oranges and yellows, it's real easy to make him pop.
They each have, like, gorgeous logos for each of the characters.
Yeah. Even Planet's logo is pretty good. It's small there, but it's good.
And now Moondog. This is a real shop, man. They had, you know, several storefronts sprinkled around the country, I guess. Or was it all in one region?
I think it came out of, like, well, let's look at some of the addresses. I was thinking Chicago, you know, Midwest kind of stuff. I think they might have had more stores. There are 6 addresses listed at the bottom of the ad. I think they may have peaked with more than 6 stores. But they were one of those chains. Like, you always hear how comic book stores can't really do, like, a national chain. They're probably one of the stores that came the closest to trying that. Not totally national, but certainly spread across regions. And Larry Marder did a lot of work at Moondogs, who would go on to have a high position at Image Comics. And I think a lot of it came from his knowledge of the direct market, which came from working, you know, in a high position at Moondogs.
Maybe that's how this here got its foothold into the magazine, because Larry Marder will come on board soon enough. And it's a, you know, it's a kayfabe ad, man, that is, I mean, it's a real place, it's real locations in the future, because this comic, once again, it's from 1963. But the crystal ball's telling you, in 1993, there's going to be stores that sell nothing but comic books and stuff that isn't even invented yet, like video and audio tapes.
So cool. And that's a Don Simpson illustration there in the middle. So they're really, you know, everybody I think involved in this project is really leaning in and contributing great pieces to this. It's such a, the sum of the parts is greater. The whole is greater than the parts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need it all.
Yeah.
You need it all to make this thing work. It's like, you know, we always harsh on like that Mignola Batman comic where it's like he's creating this mood, then you flip a page and there's a Got Milk Superman
right.
ad, and it's like just takes you right out of it. That could easily happen at any moment if we flip the page and there's a Brigade ad with, you know, Merritt Michaels and shit like that, man. But what do we get? Shamed by you English? This is one of the greatest things ever, man. And I just encourage everybody to go read that thing.
There are so many good details. Language. Language Institute method.
What you gotta do, though, man, is like, if you're certainly sitting next to somebody, wait till they're taking a drink when you start reading some of this stuff out, man, because there will be liquid all over the television set or whatever.
Yeah, very fun. And if you look at the address, it's in the state of MY. I think that's made up.
I think so, too.
Such good details. Very fun.
1313 Mockingbird Lane. You know where that is? Monster's House.
Ah, nice.
Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when fresh videos are available. What you got in stores, Jimmy?
Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive, Octobrion in 1976, which I realize is maybe what I should have led with on this show, and the Plain Janes.
Patreon.com/EdPiscors, Worm Cereal Lads, and Red Room. My 2020 books are the X-Men Grand Design Omnibus, which is sold out but still available in stores here and there, and the Ed Piscor Studio Edition, which is going fast.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we're doing. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at the links below this video.
Give us some merch and orders, Jimmy. We'll be on our way.
Read more comics.